He was in a bar somewhere, a crowded, noisy, smoky dive. Impression of laughter, voices, of a face looking up into his, a hungry face, overpainted, yet still with some youthful sweetness in it, not quite destroyed. They were moving. They're outdoors. They were strolling down a narrow street toward the waterfront, and light and sound were left behind. The girl was petulant. She did not want to go. But he laughed, and with a hand on her elbow, urged her onward. They came to a railing with the dark water swirling below and a mist curling around them. "No, I'll show you what I promised you," he was saying. "But first we must remove these." He deftly removed from her ears the cheap, dangling crystal earrings, dropped them into his pocket. "Why did you do that?" Her voice was shrill, angry. "You can't treat me like that." "Your beauty should be unadorned. Look into my eyes." She looked and her gaze grew fixed. In his eyes she saw the black void of eternity, and rising from it the grinning skull face of death. She did not struggle, did not scream, as his hungry fingers closed around her throat. Only when it was too late did she fight, so deliciously, so rewardingly. When he dropped her over into the rolling waters below and saw them suck her down with hungry swiftness, he felt again deliciously warm and full.
"Monsieur, monsieur."
He opened his eyes. Yvette was shaking him, her face concerned.
"Monsieur, you looked so distressed. I told you it was not wise."
"I'm a murderer," Harry groaned. "I killed her. Killed that girl for the sheer lust of killing."
"Comfort yourself, monsieur. You did not. It was he, Calistro, slaking his hunger for life. It is thus the spirit feeds, grows strong, on the life of those he sacrifices. But it was my hands that choked her. Oh, my God, what are we going to do?"
He stood up, his hands clenched. "Can't we do anything?"
"Nothing, alas. He lives in your body. We are shadows of the spirit trapped between life and death. Some day he will return, and you will once more regain your body."
"To be accused of all the infamous crimes he committed," Harry cried. "To pay for them. But first, I'll break this mirror. That's one thing I won't fail to do."
Her gaze was wistful. "If only that could be. Then I could at least die and be at rest. But you will not do what you think. Others have tried and failed. This mirror cannot be broken by human hand. Only he himself, Calistro, can break it. No, do not ask. I cannot answer how or why these things are. He has the knowledge. I have not. Now, you must distract yourself. Come, let me show you this world."
He let her take his hand, and numbly followed as she led. There were doorways to the great room, several of them. She led him through one, and he found himself in a small book-lined library, where alchemical apparatus crowded tables and a small white-globed lamp burned with a bright fierceness. A book lay open, revealing mystic symbols. A giant spider squatted upon it and stared at them with glistening pinpoint eyes.
"His library," Yvette said. "Once the mirror stood in this room in the world of reality. Everything the mirror reflected since it was made exists in this dark and fathomless dimension, if only it was reflected long enough. And his arts can call it into being."
"Like a time exposure being developed," Harry muttered to himself.
"Pardon?"
"I was just thinking, what lies beyond?"
"There are many rooms and a garden, and even a pond. I will show you."
There were indeed other rooms, but Harry viewed them without interest. There was a garden where fruit trees bloomed, and a pool that reflected the sunlight of a sun not seen for 2 centuries. But when he would have gone on through other doors, Yvette held him back.
"No, monsieur. Beyond there is nothing. Darkness. Emptiness. Where one can become lost and wander until the end of time, and in the darkness there are creatures."
She shivered as she spoke the word, but Harry persisted in his exploration.